Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of thee. I only know I swell with pride, and deep within my breast I thrill to see, O glory faint, the breeze.
Second was born in 1868, controversial German architect who created the Bauhaus form, I guess you could call it that, or style would be better. Walter Gropius was born today, and this is interesting. Those of you remember the movie, the Broadway show South Pacific, the great Basso, the French planter, that was played by Ezio Pinza, who was an opera star. A Basso who couldn't read music. Not only that, he was discovered, he was a bicyclist in Italy. He was singing in the shower, and a passing impresario heard him, a guy who was passing by, and he got him into opera. And during World War II, Ezio Pinza sang Italian in a Russian opera, and he worked at the Metropolitan Opera. But South Pacific is probably his most famous off the Metropolitan Opera stage role. And that recording is still available by Richard Rodgers and Hammerstein. Another famous Italian was born today. The guy who did Why We Fight, the movie series, Frank Capra, was born today. It's a series you should see. It's of course, it's World War II propaganda for our side, but it's magnificent cinematography and does help you learn history. Pictures are more important in education than words are to a lot of people. Among the other, another great singer, known as his voice was so deep, it's called black bass, Boris Christoph was born today. And then they just beatified him. I think it's too soon to be doing this. Usually the church takes a long time to raise somebody to sainthood. Pope John Paul II, Carol Montoya, was born today in 1918. And then among the deaths today, Alexander of Macedonia, the son of King Philip of Macedonia, or Alexander of Greece, who died at age 32, but he had conquered the known world. his military campaigns are still studied today. And for those of you who love horses, he had a great war horse called Bisupolis. And the gay historians like to feature him as gay. Some say he was bi, but others say it's just a Greek thing. So you have to decide this thing for yourself. But he was one of the most fascinating military generals in world history. And then those of you who heard of the Marquette College, Wisconsin, Marquette in Illinois, that was a Jesuit priest who a lot of them came down from Canada to try to convert the Indians. And then in the Illinois and Wisconsin, there is the Menominee tribe. I did some work for them once a while back. But this is where the name Marquette, Père Marquette, comes from. And then among the another great musician, conductor, composer, I don't know how he did it, he wrote these mass symphonies when he had his summers off. He worked himself to death. Gustav Mahler was born today. He only lived to be about 52, but he did a massive works, choral works. He conducted the Metropolitan Opera, the New York Philharmonic, the Vienna Opera. Now, he was born a Jew, but in order to conduct the Viennese Opera, you had to be a Roman Catholic. So he converted, but I think his wife, Alma, buried him in the Jewish cemetery. There's another guy who converted to Roman Catholicism, Otto Klemperer, great German conductor. He's buried. His son played Colonel Klink on Hogan's Heroes, and several years ago, his granddaughter operated on me. She had the name Klemperer on her chest, and just by chance, I asked her, "Are you related to Otto Klemperer?" And she says, "Yeah, he's my grandfather." And I said, "Oh, he's a great conductor," and I started giving her a dissertation on the great musician. She was really surprised. She told her things she didn't even know. And then Klemperer was born, buried, I think, in a Jewish cemetery in Switzerland. We're going to get her recordings. Jeanette Rankin was the first woman elected to Congress. She was from Montana. Montana was one of the first states to do this for women. She's the only one who opposed the United States' entry into World War I. She voted against the Declaration of War. She was still in Congress in World War II. She voted against the Declaration of War again. Fabulous woman suffragette. She voted her conscience, and she was born. She died today. And then we had William Saroyan, an Armenian ethnic great writer. He died today, and there's a part of history that the Turks are still ignoring, just like the Japanese are trying to ignore the horrible things that they did in World War II to the Chinese, the Filipinos, the Indonesians, all the places that they had their armies and navies had conquered. But Saroyan was Armenian descent, and it's horrible things that the Turks did to the Armenians and the Kurds after World War I. There is a famous movie that just came out, and we'll discuss it another day. And then the great champagne dance maestro Lawrence Welk died today. He can't get over his accent. And then this guy played the wimp crook in the Maltese Falcon, Elisha Cook. He lived a long time, lived to about 90. He died today. And then of the interesting events, we had Napoleon declared himself Emperor of France in 1804. We had the guy who invented the lawnmower, and Saturdays haven't been the same since the lawnmower was invented, because the wife or the girlfriend or the grandparents want you to get out there and make you mow the lawn. You used to be able to avoid this. And then we had there's a famous movie, The Wind and the Lion, starring Sean Connery and Bergen. It's about the kidnapping of Eon Paraditis, and this happened during the presidency of Teddy Roosevelt, and that movie is about the kidnapping of this American, and Roosevelt TR sent the word to the kidnappers, Purdy S is alive, or you people are going to be dead. And he sent the U.S. Marines over there. And it's a fabulous movie. I'd recommend you seeing it. It's a fairly accurate depiction of history during the time, that one period in Teddy Roosevelt's administration, and where he said, speak softly and carry a big stick, and you might add, use it. That was his warning. Among the other things, let's see. Oh, Montreal, Canada. They were founded in 1642 on this date, and then later on the plains of in Quebec, and later in the French and Indian War, two young generals met on the plains of Abraham when the British decided they're going to take what was called New France. The French did not send enough troops over there to occupy it, to protect it from the English, who always cast their covetous eyes on other people's property. And General Wolfe and General Montcalm, both generals were mortally wounded at that battle, but the British won the day and won Canada. And I had French-Canadian teachers for my grammar school and high school. And the French-Canadians had never gotten over the sellout. The Catholic Church in Canada at that time decided, okay, we no longer control the government, but they told their parishioners that the English capitalists own your bodies, we own your souls. And that's been a long attitude. The Quebecois, the French Canadians, did not produce a lot of businessmen. They concentrated on journalism, law, politics, and that was one of their problems. What was it? Napoleon called the French a nation of he called the English a nation of shopkeepers. But this is something that was prevalent also in French Canada, and to an extent still is. And today, also in 1917, the postmodern draft, the selective service, was legislated. And then we had in 1933, this is very relevant to what's going on in Tennessee today with all the floods on the in Memphis and in that area. The Tennessee Valley Authority was set up by Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration to try to control the flooding and to create prosperity in that region. And now, I don't know what happened, but we've got the Mississippi and these rivers overflowing down there, and all of this weird weather that's affecting this continent. And then 1934, Charles Lindbergh's baby son was kidnapped, supposedly by this German, Bruno Hauptmann. And this is interesting. The head of the New Jersey State Police who investigated the case was the father of Norman Schwarzkopf, the Storm and Norman, the general in the First Iraq War. It is said that Bruno Hauptmann may have been railroaded for political reasons, and to kidnap the Lindbergh baby was quite an outrage at the time, because Lindbergh had just, they called him the Lonesome Lindy. He had flown alone from New York to Paris, and that was quite a feat. In fact, there's a famous movie starring James Stewart, the great Jimmy Stewart, who was also a pilot and a general in the United States Air Force, a great man. Let's see, what else today? And then Tennessee is in the news on this date. In 1967, the governor of Tennessee repealed the Tennessee Monkey Law, which was a famous Scopes Monkey Trial, which had two famous lawyers at the time, Williams Jennings Bryan, who was opponent of evolution, and then Charles Darrow, the great lawyer from Chicago, a great criminal defense lawyer, who defended Scopes, who was a young teacher who was teaching evolution, which went against the precepts of the fundamentalist Protestants. And then in 1980, the Chinese launched the first intercontinental rocket on this date in 1980, and for those of you who don't know, it's the Chinese that invented rockets. And then we had 1983, the Senate reformed so-called immigration, and there was a huge amnesty for illegal aliens, and they're trying to do it again. We're going to resume several interviews I did with the South American refugee artist, and he's here today. He's going to talk about how he got into art. Here we go.
Romeo, how did you get in? By the way, that's my father's name.
No, at some point, we're going to have to edit the Romeo thing because I still don't even want that to get there, but we'll deal with that later.
Okay.
Just keep going.
How did you get into art?
You know, I got into art when I first came to this country, and like, I lived in, like I said, in Compton, and there was a lot of graffiti around, and a lot of good graffiti. You know, people doing mural work, people doing 3-4 foot burners, you know, good tags, that's a script. And I guess what always really intrigued me as like my beginning introduction to art was the scale that these people were working on. Like, as a kid, you know, I always used to draw, I have crayons and everything, but, you know, it's one thing to draw on an 8x5 piece of paper, another thing to draw on the side of a building.
You know, some people don't like that, of course. We'll get into that.
Some people don't like that. Oh, definitely, of course. But I'm saying,
property owners.
Given all the proper channels to actually be able to do that, it's a different skill set needed as an artist. You know, it's not the same deal. You know, you can be very skilled in portrait painting, but asking to do something at that scale begs other questions, you know. And
so would you call these barrio aspiring Michelangelos?
I mean, I guess.
They're not painting the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel or somebody. Well, actually, on the side of buildings, some of these, would you call that fresco, graffiti frescoes?
Frescoes? I mean, I wouldn't call graffiti frescoes. I guess I'll call them murals more than anything. But some people, I mean, it's getting there. I mean, this city has people that are actually painting, not using spray paint, but actually literally painting. I mean, at that level, yes, there are some good frescoes in the city, I guess.
Okay. No, I was just trying to draw an analogy with the great painters like Raphael and Michelangelo and those people. This is kind of a political question. Since you were a native of El Salvador, how do you feel about the theft of like the Latin America or Hispanic art, like the Mayan ruins, the Aztec? Do you have an opinion on that?
You know, I guess my biggest opinion is not so much the theft of it, it's the fact that the problems in four countries, which are rather small countries, I mean, like, goddamn, well, Salvador fits in California like 600 times, for God's sakes, or some shit like that. It's a small country. They're so mismanaged that they don't value that at any level. So they let it go. Because, I mean, in a country that's mismanaged, even if they are art lovers, if the government doesn't pursue that not being left out of the country, it's going to be gone. I mean, there's a reason why nobody's trying to steal the Washington Monument, you know? Ain't nobody trying to, like... But, I mean, if our country got to the point where it got that bad, you would start seeing stuff like that being missing, you know? And that's kind of, like, more my shame, you know, that down the road, 2-3 generations, you know, when maybe the economy gets better in our country, those kids are going to have to go to the United States to see their own ancestry.
Their archaeological and artistic heritage.
You're going to have to be like, I got to take a trip to the United States just to see my people's art.
That's an interesting concept. Yeah, I never thought of it that way. Well, the reason I brought it up because in my other interview with Jim Houston, and of course it's still going on today, that after World War II, even during World War II, when the Nazis occupied countries, they stole art on all levels. Art, sculpture. After the war, Americans and the Russians stole art. They're big scandals, and people want it back. They're not going to get back. There have been a lot of lawsuits, especially among the Holocaust victims. Mm-hmm. But and then, of course, the worst case is the Elgin marbles. Are you familiar with those?
Mm-hmm.
These are Lord Elgin. In the 18th century, the Greeks were under the thumb of the Turks, and they were fighting for their independence.
Right.
And they're not coming for you.
Damn!
I think of it. Perpetrators. You're wearing perpetrators as a New York employee.
Oh, my God. That's happened so many times. I've had so many close calls. It's not even funny. Anyway.
Don't worry, we brought you to the immigration. But getting back to the Elgin Marbles, what happened was Lord Elgin, I guess, was a buccaneer, and Byron, the poet and the writer, was over there, and he caught fever or something and died. Anyway, these were, if you've seen Greek architecture, the Parthenon and all that, they stole these sculptures and brought them to England, and they're in the British Museum. The Melina Mercury was, I don't know if you're familiar, was a famous actress. She became a cult, a Greek minister, minister of culture, and she said, we want them back. And the British, as far as I know, refused to return them. So this is an issue. I mean, apparently nobody's really looking at what's going on in South America. Am I correct?
I'm assuming, yeah. I mean, Central America, South America. I mean, art, you know what, growing up in El Salvador, there was always that once in a while you see some gringo guy that would come in and, like, check shit out of people's houses. And it wasn't until I came to this country that it dawned on me that fool is, like, stealing, like, antiques. That bastard. He's going to be back here and selling that shit for a lot of money. You know, but I don't know. I guess to me the biggest loss is I'm thinking down the road. Because, you know, it's the same
thing. You mean the heritage of a country.
Yeah, because the same thing you're talking about. Now, down the road, you're going to have to, like, argue with a country about it. And, like, again, art is never really high priority on the political courts, you know. I don't see the UN caring that much about all this stolen art. Even though, to an extent, returning art to, like, a community deeply restores heritage.
Do you think that the countries that have the, like, the, you know, in South America should lend out for exhibition in other countries, like, you know, their the country's artistic heritage, like excerpts, like sculpture, paintings, that sort of thing? Do you think they should be allowed to go on exhibition, say, in Washington or San Francisco or London?
I think that's a good idea in small doses.
Ah.
It introduces people to the culture, but in large amounts, to an extent, no, because that money won't go back to that country. That money will stay in the economies of the museums that show them. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Like the Legion of Honors, I mean, a lot of this money, apparently, some of it is actually going to be given back to, you know, the owners of the pieces of art, which is even worse. It's the owners of the pieces of art, it's not the museums or the actual people. And meanwhile, all this economy that's generated benefits balls and stuff, gathering of middle class and high class Americans just to come to the art. It's all to line the pockets of the museum at the end of the day. There's a small community. And again, the art is used as a means to an end. So, like I said, in small dosages, for the sake of every culture being able to introduce their culture to other people, yes. But down the road, there's nothing like going to the actual country and seeing the shit, you know?
Okay, so that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. Now, on a tourist, well-intentioned tourist, wants to, you know, enjoy the culture and explore the culture of the country that he or she is visiting, what practical tips would you give them, say, that they went to your country, your...
Don't tell anybody you're American. Get a deep, deep tan before you go there. Try to blend in. You know, if I'm actually going to be 100% honest, I would say, unless you know family members in El Salvador, don't go to my country.
What about Argentina, Bolivia, Venezuela?
Argentina, Bolivia is fun. Belize is nice. I mean, if you want to go Central America and actually have some safety, yeah, go to Belize.
But, I mean, say they wanted to, you know, go down there and look at the Mayan ruins, the Aztec ruins.
I mean, if you go to South
or
America...
Or even go...
I mean,
go ahead,
South
sorry.
America is more tourist-oriented.
Oh.
You know?
Can you define the difference between... Or do you, is there, in your mind, is there a difference between the term Hispanic or Latin American?
Oh, that crap. Oh, my God. We're going to get started.
I told you this was going to be good.
I don't know. I check whatever the box is closest to. I've never had that issue where they put Hispanic and Latino yet, so it's like, okay, you know. But I guess I consider myself Hispanic. I guess I consider people Latin if they speak any form of Spanish, including people from Spain, Castellano.
Mm-hmm.
But Hispanic people come from, like, the New World, you know.
Now, what about Latino? I mean, there is a debate about this. See, I consider myself part Hispanic, even though my dad's from the Philippines.
Right.
But his people were from way back before Magellan. But there is this argument, and now with this whole, the people are becoming more aware of biracial. Now, your dad is part Italian, isn't he?
Yeah, my grandfather's Italian. He came over to El Salvador during, like, World War II. He ran. fuck that shit.
He didn't want to deal with Mussolini and Ethiopia and Libya.
If you speak Italian, you can go to a lot of Latin countries, and it's really easy to pick up the language.
Oh, yeah, like Argentina, except for Brazil,
yeah, no,
which
I
is Portuguese.
Yeah, he was in Panama. And then down the road, he actually ended up in El Salvador. That's where he actually, you know.
And he met your mother and all of that.
Yeah. No, my grandfather.
Oh, your grandfather. Excuse me. get the right lineage there.
Yeah.
But
that was my dad. Yeah, my dad's been around since World War II. That would be fucking sad.
Now, is there a difference between Spanish art or Castellano and today's or Latin American art, the stuff that was done by natives over here and stuff that was brought over from Spain or people who came from Spain, the explorers, Cortez, and all these people. I assume they brought artisans with them. Is there a difference in the styles? Or,
you know, I guess the biggest difference I've ever, like, off the top of my head is all European art in some way or another, maybe up until, I'm going to go like 17th century, maybe like 1780s. Always had some sort of religious influence.
Like the churches, the Catholic churches.
So, I mean, like, granted that you got to keep in mind a lot of native New World art was never seen other than by the first explorers because people burnt shit down. So, you know, like, what we have of the art, I would say it's more like modern art. You know, like Inca, Aztec art, at least all the stuff I've seen, it depicts more emotion, feeling, you know, trying to capture a moment more so than what, at that time, European art was physically capturing people, understanding light, breaking it down to a science to understand, you know. While these guys were doing that, these other guys were making stone monuments of their gods and being like, this god's angry, what's the best shapes I can use to represent this one god?
Now, the art that you're referring to, what would you call that style? Would it be impressionism or reality art? I think that's what they call it.
It is reality art. I mean, that's...
Or something like, what's his name, the Spanish, the Mexican communist, Diego.
Diego Rivera. Oh, I like Diego. I like Botero a lot better.
Who?
Botero.
No, I'm not familiar with him. Who is Basquiat, by the way? Basquiat?
Don't know that.
Cuban, black... There's a movie about him.
Man, my art history.
Oh, okay, well, all right, we're both ignorant on that point.
Man, trust me, man. My art history, like, I was that one kid that, like, went to school. that's another thing. Like, my actual, like, degree is industrial design.
Oh, where'd you get that degree?
Hey.
Oh, hey, another, Now, okay, now we're going to get into another.
Well, we'll continue with this, fabulous interview with this South American refugee, and we'll end today. We'll be back Friday for the hour show and the best of the week, best of the month, and we'll end with our usual thing, which underscores what politics is today. A lot of they may be playing poker, but they're not smoke filled rooms. They're more often coke filled or pot filled rooms. Oh, we'll end. There is our theme.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you gonna do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Info.
Possible straight. Possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the gun.
Charlie, Charlie, are you thinking of Jack B or Jack Y?
I say, neither one. I never even met them.
I say, when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Well, we'll be back Friday. This is Peter Paul Brazzoli. Thank you for listening, and this will be up in the archives. You can download at your leisure and for your pleasure and education. Good night. Okay.